Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again and welcome. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn American English. Today we have two stories for you. First, we're off to Paris to hear about a controversial new music hall that hopes to bring classical music to some people who normally could not afford the price of a ticket. Then we travel to Africa to hear about health problems and some wild animals. So if you're ready, let's listen and learn. The new Paris Philharmonic Concert Hall opened earlier this year. Long before opening day, people questioned the large amount of money required to pay for the building. Critics also were concerned about where it would be built, far from the center of the French capital. Now, the biggest problem is a social one. Can the concert hall influence a new generation of classical music lovers? Also, can it reach out to a working-class neighborhood? In the French language, the new Philharmonic Concert Hall on the edge of Paris is known as the Philharmonie du Paris. It is the home of the Paris Symphony Orchestra. Maybe, more importantly, it is a brave social experiment. President Laurent Baye says the aim is to sell classical music to young people, the poor, and a mix of ethnic and cultural groups.
Grosso modo, le modèle qu'on propose est un modèle.
The concert hall offers music that is usually linked to the city's pricey neighborhoods, where rich people live. But the Philharmonie is not located in the center of Paris. Instead, it is in an arts and science center in northeastern Paris called Parc de la Villette. Large meat processing centers operated on the grounds a century ago. Today, the park is a peaceful hideaway in an area filled with roads and working-class families. Rap and world music stars perform at La Villette. Now, the Philharmonie is bringing classical music to the park, too. President Laurent Baye says the goal is to reach a split in the Philharmonie's public between Paris and its suburbs. He says he does not expect to win over the poorest and the most difficult areas right away. The Philharmonie made news long before it officially opened. Building delays and money problems slowed work on the $417 million project. Today, critics wonder how it can succeed when other European fine arts centers are closing. But the Philharmonie is moving forward. Philippe Provençal is a spokesman. He takes visitors on tours of the building. They walk past an exhibit about pop music star David Bowie. There are also classrooms where people can learn to play any number of musical instruments. The cost of a class is only a few dollars per person. Mr. Provençal says the goal is simple. Music should be available to everyone in the best of conditions. It is not necessary to have years of training to play an instrument. On the building's top level, visitors can see a lot. Not of Paris, but of the neighborhoods around it. To reach people in these areas, the concert hall keeps prices low on tickets for its performances. It also is setting up children's orchestras in ethnically mixed and poor neighborhoods. The goals of the Philharmonie may seem daunting, nearly impossible to reach, until you ask some young people what they think of it. Emeric Mkwanza is from Shea, the kind of suburb that the Philharmonie is targeting.
C'est plutôt spécial, la forme arrondie, genre ça fait un peu illégal.
The young man says he has not yet gone into the building, but he thinks the architecture, its design, is special. He says he has heard classical music before, so why not go to a show at the Philharmonie? The heart of the Philharmonie is its concert hall. It looks like a large golden bowl with a theater in the middle. It seats 2,400 people. But the feeling is friendly. Every seat is a good one, so everyone can enjoy the shows. To date, the Philharmonie is enjoying sell-out performances. But as the newness slowly disappears, critics suggest traditional, wealthier theatergoers may think twice before traveling to this working-class neighborhood. President Laurent Bai disagrees. Other projects faced similar criticism. At the end, he says, they were successes. I'm Jim Tedder. The Ebola crisis in Sierra Leone has led to growing concern about another disease, rabies from wild dogs. Many owners fear their dogs could infect them with Ebola, so they have freed the animals. As a result, the stray dog population and number of rabies cases are increasing. Bob Doty has more.
Rabies is spreading in Sierra Leone. The country now has one of the largest stray dog populations in Africa. The situation has become worse during the Ebola crisis. Dr. Gudish Jallo is a veterinarian. In fact, he is one of the country's few trained experts on animal medicine. He also is a member of the Sierra Leone Animal Welfare Society. The group and local partners have launched a public information campaign on how to care for dogs in the time of Ebola. Dr. Jallo estimates there are about 500,000 stray dogs in Sierra Leone. That is double the number before Ebola became a health issue in West Africa. He says one reason for the increase is dog owners dying from Ebola. He says when owners die, other people do not want the dog because they fear it might infect them with the Ebola virus. Yet, health officials in the United States have found that dogs can carry the virus but cannot infect people. That information comes from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Jallo has been traveling around Sierra Leone, telling people that they cannot get Ebola from dogs. He also says there is concern about rabies increasing with this overpopulation. For years, he has been giving free rabies vaccines to protect people from the disease. He also performs operations to keep the animals from reproducing. His efforts depend mainly on international financing. During the Ebola crisis, the rabies vaccine was not available in the country for several months because airline companies canceled flights to Sierra Leone. Only recently has he received a rabies vaccine.
What we really need to do now is to do humane dog population control, which will include vaccination, sterilization, and where necessary, humane calling.
Mabinti Kamara works with the Freetown City Council, which is a partner in the campaign. Another goal is to reduce animal abuse by making sure communities understand the importance of dogs.
These animals are very useful to us. You know, at night, as we are having these thieves coming around, when these dogs are around, they will bark at them so they will be scared. So it's very, very important for us to take care of these animals.
Ms. Kamara says reaction from the communities has been good. She says most people are following the safety campaign's advice. Dr. Jallo says he will continue to do this kind of work because of his strong interest in animals. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Do you often start your day feeling tired? Do you ever fall asleep at work? Do you sometimes just feel out of it, as if your brain is still asleep even though your body is awake? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you might be suffering from what researchers call social jet lag. And help might come from simply changing your work hours. Till Roenberg is a German chronobiologist. Chrono comes from the Greek root word chronos and means time. So a chronobiologist is a scientist that studies the states of being awake and being asleep. Mr. Roenberg says that many people are working at times that don't match their body's natural sleep-wake cycle. This natural cycle is called the circadian rhythm. Mr. Roenberg says when your work schedule conflicts with your body's inner clock, it leads to extreme tiredness, similar to jet lag.
Meaning your body clock would give you the optimal window for sleeping, let's say, between midnight and 8 o'clock, or even later, that your social schedules would like you to fall asleep at 10 o'clock and get up at 6 o'clock because of work times, for example. And that discrepancy is very like a jet lag situation.
With jet lag, people feel extremely tired when they travel by air far distances. They end up in a place where the sleep-wake cycle is different from their own. Till Roenberg led researchers in a study at Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, Germany. They studied social jet lag among workers at a steel company in Europe. Factory workers were given work times that matched their natural sleeping habits. Supervisors did not force the so-called night owls, people who like to stay awake at night, to get up early for work. On the other hand, supervisors also did not force early risers, sometimes called larks, to work late. Changing the schedules of the workers to fit their lifestyles improved their sense of well-being, says scientist Mr. Roenberg.
They sleep almost up to an hour longer on work days and therefore much shorter on their free days. And normally people have to catch up on their sleep loss on their work-free days, and we have shortened sleep on work-free days and lengthened the sleep on work days.
In other words, with the extra hour of sleep, workers reported feeling more rested. They also reported having small improvements in their general well-being. However, Mr. Roenberg says, the night owls did not report the same level of improvement. This suggests that nighttime work is hard on everyone. He adds that employees who wake up after better rest are more productive. The study was published in the journal Current Biology. I'm Anna Mateo.